What's up, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Honest Tattooer Podcast. My name is John Mesa, and I'm joined by Matt Triano.
Hey, how you doing?
And the homie G Money.
It's your boy.
And our special guest, Nikki Simpson. Welcome back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big clap. We got to give you a big clap.
Nikki is officially the most repeated guest.
Yes, yes, yes. You've been here since inception.
I'm honored. No, thank you for having me back so much.
So we know you've been up to a lot of things, and congrats on the new shop.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been a time. It's been a journey. Because I was mentioning to you earlier that you, of all people, understand the stress of moving one shop to another, but also when you're changing shops, you're going to do a lot of things differently.
Yes.
So that's been a factor.
Like the biggest change for No Idols from going from a second story, kind of more private kind of shop to being on a ground floor, it was just like, okay, this is meant to have a lot of people be able to walk into the shop, make them feel welcome, make them feel received. And it's supposed to, you know, enable the artists that are at the shop that want to grow the clientele by getting walk-ins and things like that to help them, you know, because the guys that we were all at the original No Idols location, we were doing what we were doing and we're still doing the same thing of just like, we have enough clientele that we can kind of keep it going, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
The hardest thing from moving shop, like, believe it or not, I think it cost me, this is going to sound crazy, but I think it cost me almost like $6,000 to $7,000 to leave that shop.
Just in moving.
And I'm talking about, and there were a lot of things that were in that shop that didn't fit in this shop, and to get rid of it, it cost money. Also to return the place as a clean box at the end, it costs money. You know, like any changes you make, you have to bleed it. You have to
break them down.
You have to break it back down and bring it back to normal, you know, and all of that costs money.
Didn't we leave that wall and swinging door though? And the closet?
Only those stayed, but everything else, like as far as like, and actually no, because I paid a company to come in and finish taking that out.
Get out.
Yeah.
I mean, it had to have been more than $6,000 to $7,000 because you're considering, okay, when you get into a new place, there's security deposits, there's rent, there's this and that. Then there's the moving fees, and then...
Oh, I'm not talking about getting in here. I'm just talking about leaving that.
Just leaving it, yeah.
It's talking about like just leaving that place costs that much money. You know, I'm not talking about what it costs to move into this place.
That's tens of thousands.
that costs a whole lot of money. And also then doing the build, because when you get a place, it's like bare, you know? You get a place, like they say, you get a white box. In this case, it wasn't a white box. It was a pink box.
It was a hot pink box.
It was a hot pink box. When I got this location, everything was pink. Every part of everywhere here.
Hot pink.
It was hot pink. And it was a store.
It was a clothing store,
It was a clothing store.
Yeah.
Shout out to the people that were here before. Rest in peace, Jimmy. Jimmy was, you know.
Oh, that's right.
You know, he was.
I need more.
Yeah, I need more. You know, that he... I need more before that. He was a trash vaudeville and he was kind of a New York City rock fashion legend guy, you know? Yeah. And one of the coolest things that was in this place before I took it over, right by where you're at, they were like kind of like in the Hollywood sign kind of things. They had these like blocks with like Debbie Harry and Iggy Pop. They had their hands imprinted and they were here at the opening party of that store.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of good mojo in this store.
Where are those now?
I don't know. They took those things and I have no idea where they are. But I'm sure then somebody knew that those were worth a lot of money. So they're like, oh, we're going to take this. So they took them.
Mine was just a pharmacy.
It was a pharmacy. Damn. Oh, man. You know, like lately around here, there's a lot of new restaurants in old stores, right? And they keep the old, like right over there, there's a place that was like an old like painting store, but it's a restaurant, but they kept the old like, because it looks like 80s, 70s looking kind of signage, you know? So, and there's a few places like that Bar Pianos that's here. Mm-hmm. Like it used to be a piano store and they just kept it. And they're like, we're just going to call this Bar Pianos from now on.
Yeah. Mm. That's cool. Yeah, no, we experienced a lot more than just the normal shifting shops. Cause I was pretty open about it before. I don't know if I ever told you, but like our main reason for moving, we were a half basement, so you have to go downstairs to get into the shop. You've been there before.
Yeah.
It wasn't a problem for the first maybe 2-3 years, but something happened in the last 2 years where every time it would be a bad storm, we flooded.
Oh my God.
We flooded 5 times in 5 years.
Damn. Oh my Yikes. God. That's terrifying.
Yeah. And you know, the first few times you're like, what the fuck? Like, what do we do?
Yeah.
Okay. So after that happens more and more, I just started feeling like we're just not meant to be here. This isn't it. This is not it. And the last flood was so bad and our landlord never did anything to help us. He never installed a sub pump. He never did any of that. And every time it floods, you have to pay so much money just to replace things. And the last time we had this crazy crew, this cleaning crew, we had to sanitize everything, dry everything, but it was so bad. It was irreparable. We had to go.
Oh man.
Because once there's that much water damage, it can get into your walls and like, you got to go.
Fernando.
Gabe's got to pay up.
Thank you.
Yo, Fernando, hook us up with a round of shots, bro. Tequila?
You guys are the best.
Tequila para acá.
I do bourbon.
Tequila. Es la whiskey.
Yeah.
Fernando, do me a favor. Can you bring mezcal? Can you bring me a change, por favor?
Gracias, bro.
I left 100.
This is a cool shop.
I know. That's one of the best perks about working on Orchard Street.
Take a quick pause, guys.
There's
I'm gonna bring up the plate.
No doubt. So, No Idols is right next to a restaurant called Kacha. We're going to shout them out because they really take care of us. They're pretty awesome. The food is amazing. The bartenders are awesome people. And most of all, they will bring you a drink or food while you're getting tattooed right next to you at any point in time. All you got to do is go by, let them know where you're at. And what's wild is that, like, you know, in like restaurants under like system, they have all tables. Mm-hmm. There's all the tables in the restaurant and then tattoo shop.
We're in their system.
We're in their system.
That's perfect.
we're part of it.
My drink. Awesome.
So I wonder if all this rain that we just got the last couple of days, if your old place flooded.
Oh, that bitch is underwater. There's fish in there.
I fish, so I'm going to go fishing there.
Yeah, go in there. It's definitely. Because we even went 2 days ago to pick up the signage that we had left over, and we noticed they changed nothing about the outside. So that means they haven't gone in there.
For sure.
I don't even know, but it just wasn't conducive to have a business in. Yeah. After a while, it's just, you know, we got to move on. There were a multitude of reasons other than just flooding. Oh my God, I could just go on and on about all the crazy things, but I feel like if there's any business owner on here, they can understand that there's so many things that you deal with.
Things spring up.
Yeah. We also had, like a crazy person living in the building that would make a million calls to the city, with these crazy reports saying that we lived there, that when we moved in, they saw us moving couches in. So this guy, he has foil, like aluminum foil up on his windows, and he would call the city and say, there's people, they're living down there, and it's a commercial space. And then another time, one of our friends came by just on his bike and just stopping by to say hi. And he's, you know, just like a bearded tattooed guy. And he called and he said, they're dealing drugs outside.
Oh my God.
A million things happening. And then one time he said, they're tattooing children. They're tattooed my child.
What?
He doesn't have kids. We know everything about this guy from goodness. Our super. He doesn't have children, and he just called a million times against us. But then I have a client who is a detective, and I said, can you look up what's up with this whole situation. He was able to look up all of the different times that any apartment in that building was called to the city. And this guy made 60 calls within 4 to 5 months to the city on 8 units in that building.
Wow.
He was out for everybody. He wanted us out. And so I started getting really pissy because what if I have a client right there and then the city walks in saying, are you tattooing? Like, are you doing this?
Are you tattooing doing children in here?
Oh my God. Right? Like,
oh my God,
that's a bad look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So every time they came, they're like, I know it's this guy. It's our job to come. I'm sorry. So it just got so absurd and ridiculous. I had to call the cops and be like, you need to do a wellness check on this dude. Like, figure this out for us. This is not okay. That, and then just problem after problem. And at some point you have to realize this is not meant for us.
Uh-oh.
Whoa.
Whoa.
What just fell?
Dude, I have no. Oh, I think it was like my battery pack that was next to the thing.
It was the demon from the old shop. I'm telling you,
the ghost of this shop.
He could feel what I was saying. Ghost.
It was Jimmy.
It was the ghost.
The ghost of I Need More.
Yeah. So we're like, all right, time to go, and we got to also get out of here before that last flood does any more damage and becomes a risk. So we had to do it really fast. We had to find a space and move. Boom, 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 and not sacrifice any of the quality of what we're creating either.
If you remember, a few weeks back, we had Ed from Tattoo Armor on the podcast, and he was able to hook us up with a discount code for our followers. So Tattoo Armor is literally the best way to wrap your client. I've been using it, Matt's been using it, and it's just awesome. There's no mess, there's no glue, and it's just super comfortable. I hope you can try it for yourself, and just go on to Tattoo Armor and use the code HONESTTATTOOER for 20% off your order.
Fernando, coming through, my guy.
Man.
Hermano, gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ooh, thank you.
Gracias. Oh, yeah.
My goodness.
Salud. Salud, Fernando. Gracias.
I should have moved next to a restaurant.
They're like, damn, that would have been a good move.
My part.
What is a half a basement? Are you sharing that space with somebody else?
I got the plate over there. Plato de. Fernando, thank you. As
you
always.
You mean it's like a half step down? Like, it's that not a full basement, but it's like a half step down.
So you know how you have like a full basement down there? So like, it's just...
it's not as deep?
It's not as deep. Yeah.
Okay.
You go down like maybe 5 steps instead of going like a full down. Yeah, a full flight down.
Yeah, and we just knew there was something sketchy about this. So we moved and we found the new space and it was perfect and everything's great. But my best friend was like, yo, dude, I'm looking for apartments on Craigslist. I found your shop. It popped up. And she's like, can I message them pretending I'm like a nail salon and all that and just get some dirt about the shop? I said, yeah. Let's go. Like, so she asked them, hey, I know that there's been a lot of flooding in the city in the last few years, and I noticed that it's a basement. Has there been any history of flooding in this space? And then within 10 minutes, five minutes, she said it was like really quick. They said, no flooding ever. Everything's good. There's a drain. There's 2 drains. Everything's cool.
Wow.
Oh, Lord.
Yes. So
whoever is in that new space, if it's not underwater now, they will be underwater. And
yikes. Wow.
They also never replaced the walls because we had to leave because you have to like open up the walls and check for moisture and any problems like that. I looked at the listing they put up and it's the same. Our wallpaper is still up. So that means they didn't do anything.
Check anything. So one thing I learned that you can do, at least in New York City, you can check for flood zone. There's a flood zone map. And you can check in which part of the cities, like you're either like in dips, you know, where it's like, that's where water puddles and that's where you're more likely to get flooded.
Oh, I was studying that.
Yes. Yeah, so you're like, you started learning that. You're like, oh, fuck, never again.
At spaces, and I was getting down to the ground and checking the pitch of the floor.
Yeah. You're like, does this dip in here?
If it rains too much, could we have this happen? So we picked a space that was like two or three steps up.
Yes.
Just so that doesn't happen. But yeah.
That's great. That's great. One thing, for example, even here in this location. So every now and then, if there's like a big enough rainfall, there's like certain parts of this building where somehow water is leaking through. And I have had to have arguments over and over with the building about like, hey, you guys got to fix your building. Mm-hmm. And, you know, each time they like do minor fixes, minor repairs, but nothing that is going to completely solve the issue.
Well, it costs them money.
It costs them money.
What did the guy tell you today?
Oh, I'll be back like in 20 minutes. The guy never came
back. Never came back.
But not only that, you were like, no, it only happens when it's raining. Yeah. It's something with the roof.
And he was like, oh, I'm going to go run all the units. They're going to run the bathtubs and everything to see if it's the pipes. And I was like, listen, man.
It's not the pipes, bro.
I was like, bro, it only happens when it rains
it
really hard.
It only happens when it rains.
It's something. You got to find the leak on your roof and it's going to cost you money. Yes.
It's going to cost you money. You got to fix
You got to fix it.
There's so many things like that. Like
I'll just flush the toilets a couple of times. We'll see where the leak comes from.
You know.
Even something that I didn't know when I got this place. So this shop, it's an old building, and it's many buildings like it in the Lower East Side, where we have a couple of steps to come in to the building. I didn't know that you needed to have, by federal law, like accessibility for handicap, you know, built into the building. Now, it's impossible for the building to do it without costing them a whole ton of money.
Sure.
But you're still able to get sued by anyone because you don't have that accessibility. So in place, you need to have all of these, like, you need to have signs, you need to have a ramp accessible, you need to have all these things in place to be able to counter that. So I did have to deal with a lawsuit, you know, and pay money for it. You know,
really?
Yes, it was a hard lesson learned. You know, so like those are little things that when you embark on opening a business, like, you know, like I'm a fucking tattooer, man. I'm not going through all these things. And even if you hire a lawyer, which I did to like overlook into my lease and look at all of these things, and some things were caught on it, you know, like when I first got this place, there was something on the lease where like the people from the building wanted to tag me with like a ridiculous amount of the real estate taxes for the building. Every building is responsible for real estate taxes. So what they'll do, some buildings, like if you get, you know, if you have a commercial building, it'll be a certain percentage, you know, and you can negotiate that percentage, you know, you can't get rid of it, but you can negotiate that percentage. Usually it'll be something like by your square footage of like what you're responsible for based on your square footage, based on the building.
Even if you're renting a space.
Even if you're renting a space.
Because I know in the city they bring up your rent like a certain percentage every year or so.
Correct.
Like, are you talking about something different?
It is something different. It is your rent is one thing. Your share of the real estate tax is a separate thing. And that will change based upon your initial year. So whatever it was on your initial year, there's going to be like, oh, next year it went up a certain percentage based on that first year. So you're going to pay money on that. And that's an additional tax that is not accounted for on your rent. So your first rent, you know, you pay your money. And then all of a sudden, like 3 months later, it hits like that time of the year. And all of a sudden you get like, all right, this is your additional real estate tax bill. And you're like, oh my God. Then that, if you factor that into your rent, you realize that your rent is way higher. Okay. You know,
is real estate tax the same as what I would be paying property tax?
It is the same thing.
Okay. That's crazy. So isn't that the owner's responsibility?
You would think.
It is. If you are in a residential unit, it is the owner's responsibility. If you're in a commercial unit, it is passed down to the commercial business.
Man.
Well, I learned my lesson in pay as much as your lawyer needs because they are so
absolutely
so clutch.
Yes.
Like our another client of mine who was a real estate lawyer. Isn't that like the best when you have like a client that has like a profession?
You got a guy for everything.
Oh,
you got
a
guy. You need a guy.
And he was just helping us every single step of the way. We got out of our lease, no problem. He he killed it for us, but he's the kind of person that looks at that fine print and realizes all these things that you wouldn't normally see. Like, we're tattooers. We just, you know, we're figuring out things as a business owner as we're going. And, you need a professional to do that for you sometimes. If we didn't have him, we would have been screwed. I would have just left that aquarium of a shop.
The Aquaman shop.
Grab scuba gear. Don't forget your scuba gear.
Aqua ink.
H2O. No.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but it was just a million signs from the universe. Time to go. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But I think from the beginning of that shop, it was already on the wrong foot because we opened a month before COVID. And we had plenty of artists that were coming into work for us that got canceled. You can't do big parties to promote things. You can't do any kind of like events and being a part of the community. It was all just kind of stalled out. So whatever our vision was, it just turned into survival mode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like in the transition from the first shop, my vision of it was something completely different. I wanted it to just be kind of like a chill private studio with like really talented artists and like no stress, no this, no that. But it was just stress. And then when you open your first shop on your own, you can only take so much advice from your peers until you experience it on your own. So not only is it, you know, real estate issues, if it's like, the pandemic or bearing the elements and things like that, it's also learning firsthand how to be a shop owner, mm-hmm. how to navigate your way through this industry, but also artist relations, everything. And I think I needed everything. It needed to go underwater for me to move on, because that was the thing that changed my entire vision of what I wanted a shop to be. And now that we've had the new shop, it was like, oh yeah, this is the positive energy we needed. This is the things that should have just been baseline there already. And I think there's something really special about going into something with a little bit of that knowledge.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now you know not to do certain things. Now you know where to spend your money. Don't blow your money doing this. Now you see that you want to, you know, do this, this, and that. So it's been like a massive learning experience, but like in the really bruised way, where you're like, I don't want this to happen again. So we have to do this now.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been that, and I'm reaching out to my peers. Hey, how do you do this? What do you do about this? Because I don't want to go into anything blind ever again. Right.
Yeah. And I think like one thing from asking different people about how they do in their shops, and it's like, everybody's going to have a different answer. And just like when you're learning the tattoo, find what works for you, you know, and what works for your team, mm-hmm. you know, because you have to really create that atmosphere in your shop where you guys feel like you're working together, because you are. You know, everybody's reputation affects each other's reputation, you know, and you're working to build camaraderie, but also an environment where people feel welcomed, where people feel like they want to be part of, where people say like, those people are great there. Not just that artist, but like, oh, everybody there's awesome. Mm-hmm. Like that's my favorite compliment. It's like, I went there. Everybody was so nice. Everybody was so welcoming.
Yeah.
And I love when I'm, you know, out sometimes, you know, like this week my son had spring break and I was gone for days, you know, and there was a guest artist here, and I loved to hear when they left, like, oh, man, everybody was so nice and it was so awesome to be here. I'm like, that's all I want to hear. You know, you want to create that kind of environment for people.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to make sure that anybody that's coming into your space sees the value in it that you want them to see. And, you know, I realized after a while, I wasn't able to give that value to my artists with that risk, with all the other problems that it was bringing up. And like, I got to protect what's mine. So time to start over, and not only start over in a new space, it's going to be better for, you know, the shop itself, but business wise, how am I going to do things over again where I actually have a chance to do things differently? New space, new idea, new vision, new business model. I had never planned on it, but the new shop became a walk-in shop. And I was never a walk-in artist. I created the old shop to just be a private space, but then it's a street level shop with a lot of, you know, visual attention. So people are just coming in from the neighborhood. Oh, what's going on, guys? Hey, I want, like, oh, you guys are here now. So now we're navigating this to be a place that's going to give back to my artists. So it's not just these artists bringing in their own appointments and serving themselves. We want to be able to serve our artists that are working for us, taking care of the walk-in traffic that, you know, that we have at the shop.
How far away is this new shop from the old location?
Maybe like 15, 20 minutes. 'Cause the old location was in Williamsburg. We're in Bushwick now.
Okay.
Okay.
So close enough, but I was telling Gabe earlier, Williamsburg never, even though it's like super hip and trendy and all that, or they say that it's great for that, it never served us at all. And for some reason, I went into this going like, all right, it's Bushwick. It's my neighborhood. I live 5-10 minutes away. It's convenient. I know it, but the neighborhood has been so much more welcoming. It's not as many, you know, transplant kids. It's people that have been living there for a long time, and they've all been so nice. And now me and my husband that own the shop, we're like, okay, now we're gonna build a walk-in shop now. How do we do this? And it's been very eye-opening. Even my apprentice, who I trained as her own kind of private artist,
yeah,
she's getting walk-ins where you can't draw for 3 hours. You have to draw it now.
Get on it.
Right.
Now.
So it's a learning experience for everybody, but it's been really, really great because she's excited about it. She's like, oh my God, I got to do this.
I got to do this right now.
Right. Right. And I can't be more grateful for the change, because I don't feel guilt when there's an artist that's going through a little slow patch or something. Like, yeah, there's something like that to help them. I also just kind of love getting to know the community too, like actually getting to know the neighbors and
the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool. I kind of love it. I missed that high paced energy from other tattoo shops before. So I did the private thing, and I don't know, it's just kind of boring. I kind of like,
can you say that again? The private thing is boring. What?
It's boring. I mean, I didn't have a private studio. It just wasn't street level, big, you know,
advertising. Yeah.
I don't know. I really do love the excitement of like not knowing what's coming in. Is it going to be like a little banger? Is it going to be this? And you know, the other day, my artist, she is new to the walk-in life, and out of nowhere, she gets a giant wolf tattoo with all this other stuff on a forearm, black and gray. He's got an unlimited budget, like over $1,000 tattoo. And she was just chilling there. She's like, this is how it can be. I was like, apparently.
This is great.
Yeah, I guess it's showing itself to be that like that.
It's great. So I said, all right, well, now this is another side of tattooing that I'm glad you get to see, because I didn't train you this way. Now you have to learn this part of it. And cool. I kind of love it.
When I did walk-ins, when, you know, I worked at a shop, Big Joe's, shout out to the homies, but you know, there was a ton of Cherry Creek flash everywhere, you know, and somebody would come and be like, they would see like, you know, the OG wolf with the moon in the back, the wolf howling at the moon, right?
Oh yeah.
Simple. Bum, oh my bum,
goodness.
Right?
I know that one.
Yes. It was a classic one, right? Or the Reaper. There was like the classic Cherry Creek Reaper, right? And then they'd be like, oh, this looks sick, right? And that's when you have the opportunity to like, if they think that looks sick, if you're a good artist, you're like, I know you think this looks sick, but check this out. Now you have about 10 minutes to draw something really fast that is a loose sketch that you can be like, but look how sick this could be. Mm-hmm. And that's when you can upsell a tattoo, because that tattoo that's on the wall has a flat price on it. Or you can show them that if they give you an hour, and I'm serious, an hour, not like, well, we're going to book an appointment, you're going to come back another day. No, give me an hour, dude. I'm going to draw you something really freaking cool in an hour so I can show you what I can possibly do. And then you can wow that person and you can give them something that's going to be, you're like, I know this is cool, but I've done this like a million times on people. Let me give you something one of a kind. Only you're going to have it. It's going to be awesome. But you got to give me an hour, dude, to draw this thing.
Well, people that come in for a walk-in, they're ready to get tattooed. They have the money. They're ready to do it now. If you can't do it right now, they're going to go to the next shop. It doesn't matter.
They want to get tattooed right now. They don't want to go home and think about it. They want to get tattooed today.
So do you want that however many hundreds of dollars to however much this is? Do you want that or do you not? So learning how to be on your feet, it's a skill and it's a muscle you have to exercise.
Yes,
but it's definitely also learning how to close the sale with somebody coming in.
Oh, yeah.
If they have an idea and then say you don't have flash, you now have to be a salesman for yourself.
Correct.
You have to guide them in the direction where they're going to be interested. They have an idea, they're showing you pictures or something like that. But how do you get them to want to have that appointment right here, right now? You have to have that kind of finesse. You got to have those like interpersonal skills and...
That's what's getting lost, I feel like, in tattooing today, because everything that we said right now, we said, we use the word sell. But I didn't get into this business. I want to be an artist. No. I didn't get in here to sell things.
Yeah, that's just a whole
Oh my God, dude.
I don't understand people that don't like money.
Yeah, it's a whole interaction psychology that comes into play that you need to learn and acquire those skills to how to sell your... Like, most importantly, how to display your confidence to where the person's going to be like, I just met this person, but they sound like they know what they're talking about, and I'm probably going to take their advice on a tattoo.
Yeah.
Oh, my art should just sell itself.
I know.
What's that one movie where he's like, ABC, always be closing?
Oh, that's Boiling Room.
Yeah.
ABC, always be closing.
Always be closing. But in that, you have to change your demeanor. You can't just be like that tough guy
at a
walk-in shop, like, I could do this instead. Nah. It's going to be this much. It's not like that anymore. If you want to make money, if you want to have like a good business and where people are going to want to refer you to somebody else, you have to have those skills, you have to have a personality. You have to make the client feel comfortable and trust you within 10 minutes of speaking to them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think it's important for people to not only learn how to sell, but how to just communicate in general.
Communicate ideas.
Ideas, but like actually just be able to talk without being like, I think we could do this.
You know what?
Like, you're going to sound like, I'm going to trust my body, but someone just can't even.
You know what's funny? And this is probably coming from like the way that I came up in tattooing, which was total like street shop vibes. I actually enjoy, you know, given the chance to encounter somebody new, deciphering what they want, because for me, it's like, I'm going to crack this code, you know, and figuring out what they want. They're always going to give you an idea of what they want, either based on like cell phone pictures, you know, or just verbally, they got an idea. And one of the things that I love to do is, I'll always, even if they want words or a simple picture, I'll literally sketch up rough little things right in front of them and just create like a general idea of something.
Do it, Matt. Do it. Yeah. Do it. You don't want to get it. You got to pull it all the way into the curb.
Oh, and also just, I make people feel comfortable about their idea, that it's not stupid and that it's not something silly or something that I wouldn't possibly be interested in doing, you know? And I'm just like, no, I'm stoked to do it either way. You know, if I can ever offer any flexibility on creativity, I'm always going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And almost always when I offer that option, people always want the custom route.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're always so stoked to do it. And that's like the best part of my job is like, I tattooed somebody new. I over exceeded their expectations, and now I got a customer. I got a new customer.
You got a new customer. Life, you
know? That's going
to
grow.
How many times people came to you and were like, I just want to get a script font. This is the computer font that I found online. And you're like, can I just draw it for you real quick?
I'm going to just draw it for you.
I'm going to just draw it for you. And they're like, what do you mean?
And they're like, I want that.
And then you just
go, what you just drew.
And you're like, wow, that looks way cool, dude. Yeah. And you changed your mind.
And I'm always like, even though in my mind, I'm like, gotcha. you know, into what I want to do.
Yeah.
But it's more of a, I still wanted to give you what you wanted, but just in my way of handling it professionally, what I thought was aesthetically better.
Yes. Yes.
But you know, it's been good, but you know, a lot of that takes, you know, to be able to sell yourself and to like almost kind of like steer a person in the direction, it does take, you know, that kind of social expertise that you got to build up by just talking to people, being out there and just talking to people.
I mean, I think it goes even beyond just walk-ins, because so many of my appointments, I've never met them before. So tattoo shops can be kind of an intimidating place for people. So a lot of people can come in already expecting to feel a little overwhelmed, intimidated. They don't know the artist. They don't know anything about them. So within those first few minutes, you have to, or at least you should, try to make that first meeting as comfortable of an experience as possible with your client, because they already came to you and made an appointment. They're spending a lot of money on you and they're spending the entire day with you. It's good to be able to set the stage for them to feel like they made a good decision in booking this appointment with you. We are in the customer service industry, and I think a lot of tattooers forget that. We are providing a service.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had a conversation with someone who isn't a tattooer, just a client, and actually a client of mine. And he was upset that I didn't post the tattoo that I did on him. And I was like, bro,
my goodness, that's right.
Are you happy with the tattoo that you got? Because that's all that matters. Like if you're happy with the tattoo, that means I did my job well.
Yeah.
I provided you a good service. You're happy with the service. You're happy with the product that you got. Who cares about the photo?
Did he message you and say like, why didn't you?
No, it was a comment thread on one of our posts that we made. And but that's just it. Like even clients forget sometimes that this is a service industry also.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're also spending hours on end with somebody. So not only are you giving them a tattoo, you're giving them an experience. So be a person, you know, be a good person and make them feel good. Like they're already giving you their body. They trust you with their body. So, you know, you don't got to be a tough guy. You don't got to be anything like, you don't got to be a hot shot or anything like that. There's something really special when you can create that bond with a client that already trusts you with their body. And you can hang out with them for hours and have a good time. And then they enjoy the experience so much. They leave you a review.
Yeah.
They tell their friends. They take your cards. And now they're bringing you more business. And now you have a return client. And all of that is creating more and more income, steady income. And you should also probably feel good about yourself and what you're doing, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Completely.
Speaking of the Holler and Wolf, you know Jimmy Snez?
Yeah.
I used to work with him at Boston Tattoo Company, and I always like think about this story. Like, it was like this old guy that came in. Like, I can't even like make up his accent, but like he always references this story where he comes in. He's like, "Y'all got any of them hollering wolves?"
Hollering.
Yeah, I want him like barking at the moon. You know, one of them hollering wolves. Jimmy's like, "Yeah."
Right there.
Right there on the wall.
And he still like drew the new one for him. But I always think, I see a wolf tattoo and I go, that's a hollering wolf right there.
Hollering wolf. He's hollering. That's so good. Man, tattooing is one of those wonderful things that you get to do. And once you've been doing it for a long time, you appreciate it even more. The longer you do it, the more you appreciate it. Because, man, going to work, it very hardly does it ever feel like, oh man, I gotta go to work. You know, I was like, oh shit, cool, I'm gonna go to the shop, I'm gonna hang out and see my friends, and I'm gonna meet somebody new, and I'm gonna do a cool design for them,
you know what,
and it's gonna be a good vibe.
You're right. Because the only thing, like, it's funny. Like, I get pissed off on the way to work. But it's because I'm once driving. You're here, like, cool. Yeah. It's like, I'm not pissed off because I'm driving to work.
Yeah.
It's, I'm just pissed off at the process of driving.
Yeah.
Once I get to work, I'm like, yes. Sick.
Sweet.
It's so funny, too, because, I mean, your wife works hard, too. My wife works hard. And I can't even complain about a bad day at work. She's like, you won't get to complain a hard day at work.
I'd be like, can you believe I have to redraw the freaking design?
Oh. Yeah. Oh, you got to draw a new.
She's like, I had the whole company. What? I had the whole company literally shit on me for the fucking marketing bullshit that I had to go through.
And yo, like, even when we
what did you have to do? Replace the stencil a couple of times?
Even when we were doing renovations at the shop, a lot of it was just us doing the like the trim work and the bathroom and all this shit. And my husband's teaching me how to like use caulking, and I'm learning how to grout and do tile and all this shit. And I was like, and we did this every day for a month on top of what the contractors already had to do in there. And I never had more respect for any profession than a contractor. And I was like, that's a real motherfucking job where
that's a
they come home.
Yeah.
If I, like, we couldn't move by the end of the month. Our bodies were just broken. We're tired. It was, you know, 14-hour days of just doing, like, manual labor and things like that. And I'm like, fucking people do this every day for decades. Yeah. And I'm complaining that I had to tattoo a little longer than that. Oh, wham, my back hurts. Oh, my back. Yeah, there's people laying concrete in blistering New York City sun or wherever else. Man. And they're doing it forever.
Snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild.
Heat waves, it doesn't matter.
They're out there just.
They can bitch.
They're actually out there.
But they don't.
That's they, the don't.
They don't.
It's normal, right?
Yeah.
It's their income. It's their livelihood. They're providing for their family.
I know a lot of construction guys, just people in that kind of manual labor industry, and none of them complain. They're like, yep, they're proud of what they do. Like, this is how I provide a living for my family, and that they don't complain at all.
But I feel like that's a long time to harden somebody. Like, they're calloused. They have a point of reference of what is bad and what's a good day. Because a good day to them was one of my worst days learning how to fucking renovate anything or painting for days and days and, like, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
It put everything into perspective for me in a really good way because I was like, you know what? It does make me appreciate the space more because I'm working way harder for the end result. So you have a lot more pride in it.
Yeah.
And then when you feel your body just, like, sore and broken, you're like, you know, it's because I have a vision. I have a vision. It's going to be great.
It humbles you.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of feel like a sissy when, like, I complain that my back hurts from sitting down all day. Like, oh, I've been sitting. My shoulders hurt.
But it hurts.
My hands hurt. And then you think about these guys who are, like, weighing bricks for 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
Like,
you should, like, you know, standing up for a little bit.
But I'm just saying the point of, like, our job's so easy.
Yeah. There's it's no kind of a sweet job.
Yeah.
It's all based on something. I know, like, one day on Ink Master, we had to lay brick.
Oh, man. That sounds awesome.
And you know how, like, the flash challenges are 6 hours?
Yeah.
Was that part of a challenge?
Yeah. We had to
lay brick.
Lay brick.
Lay brick.
Yeah.
I've heard it all.
Yeah. And the bricks were a different color. So we had to create an image with the bricks and you have to, like, get the cement and do that. And I think it was like a wall probably about this size, maybe a little bit higher.
Okay.
And our producer came out and she's like, good news, guys. We have 4 more hours for you to do this. You can finish it.
You got four more hours, bro.
Like, all right.
You're like sick.
And at the end of the day, I was like, thank God I'm a tattooer and not someone laying brick, but I don't know. I feel like there should be moments where you can compare things. It puts everything into perspective for you. Like, we do have a pretty cushy job. Our backs do hurt like shit. They hurt a lot.
Yeah. Our bodies do take a little bit of a beating.
Yeah.
Depending on our posture as well.
Our shrimp posture.
Yeah.
Cooked shrimp.
I mean, you know, I'm always trying to do them crispy ass lines. So, you know, I'm like a little gremlin.
Yeah.
My position isn't looking any anything standard at all.
Crispy lines and crooked spine.
Yeah, crooked spine. Yeah, the more crispy the line, the more crooked the spine.
Yeah. Man, tattooing is very rewarding. You get to meet a lot of good people. And I think the easiest thing you can do is come to work with a good attitude. And most of all, which is something that I've been struggling with some of the people that work here straight up, is just come to work and fucking stay at work.
Stick around.
Stick around, man. To stay at work.
I love coming to work.
You have such a chill job to do.
Yeah.
For, I think people forget that a full-time job is 8 hours a day. Mm. That's a full-time job, my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which hour shop, even if you stayed the entire time from open to close?
It's seven hours. And, you know, when a shop opens at 1 and you show up at 2 and the shop closes at 8 and you leave at 7, I just want to tell you, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Well, yo, straight up.
Yeah, one of the things that we've started doing at the new shop, unless you're an artist that's super booked and you're there all the time. Anyways.
Live your life.
Yeah, go do your thing.
You live your life, bro.
If you're coming in to hopefully get walk-ins, that means you're going to be there for many hours and sometimes you may not get anybody that comes in or something like that. And one of my artists was there and she's like, you know, I thought it would be wasting time, but I'm realizing now that I'm at work and nobody's coming in maybe today or right now, I'm still at work. So my brain is in work mode. So now I'm going to draw this. I'm going to focus on ordering this. I'm going to do this, and that. Whereas if she was home, her mindset wouldn't necessarily be stuck at
work. That
100%.
100%.
Disconnected completely.
So when we're there together and she's kind of like hanging out, she now has me right there to ask, hey, I want to look up how to do this kind of drawing, or I want to order this, or I want to practice this. And I tell her, well, if you're not tattooing, just do some like fake skin tattoos, do something that you're not good at yet and practice and make this time when you're at work worth it.
Mm-hmm. Be productive.
And she never feels, you know, unhappy about being there. Like she's like, well, she told me, feel like I'm learning how to use my time more wisely because I don't have to leave whenever I'm done working. She's like, my brain is in work mode.
Yes. If I'm glad that Gabe is wearing his Bass Pro Shop hat today. Because
I'm always wearing it. I know.
But this is related to fishing, right? If you're a walk-in artist, right? Let's say you're a fisherman. The only place you can fucking fish is if you're out on the water. That's it. That's the only place where you can fish. You're not going to fish when you're in your house. You're not going to fish when you're in your car. Mm-mm. You're not going to fish. The only place you can fish if you're on the fucking water.
Yep.
You know?
If you don't show up to the lake, you ain't fishing.
You ain't fucking fishing, my guy.
That's true.
You ain't catching.
You ain't catching nothing. You know?
Yeah.
So you're only going to catch as many fish according to how much time you spent out on the water.
That's right.
Do you think that also can correlate to how much you immerse yourself in the actual tattoo industry, say like doing conventions, doing guest spots, or doing anything else tattoo related? I feel like there's a moment that a lot of tattooers can run into where they just come in, do their tattoo, and then they go home. But I feel like if you're around enough people all the time that your purpose for being there is tattooing.
Yeah, your presence does generate income. It literally does just by being around.
Just being around.
Yeah, because you as a tattooer, like you're marketing yourself and you yourself are this wide net you're trying to cast in what is the tattoo industry and trying to catch clients and just being around, you know, just. Like you said, it's just like when you're around longer, I don't know. I get what you're saying and it totally applies.
Yeah. And even at the old shop, I feel like I had a mentality. I just got really beaten down after a while. I just started getting really fed up with shit for obvious reasons. Just owning a shop that it was problem after problem. It really like took the wind out of my sails and I started not appreciating the world that I'm a part of as much as I should have.
Like the creative, the being creative?
Yeah, because it was combined with all this other bad shit. So I would spend a lot of time away from the shop. And that wasn't helpful for anybody that worked for me. That wasn't helpful for myself. And I had a bad idea of what I was doing, that I wasn't motivating myself to go and visit and do guest spots. I wasn't motivated to do anything extra than what was asked of me. So I feel like it's super important to be in the right environment for you, mm-hmm. around people that motivate you and people that want you to be better. If you see someone doing more than you and you don't feel motivated to want the same, I don't know. You might run into some stagnancy.
Yeah.
You always want to surround yourself with either like-minded people or people who are a little bit more motivated and happier than you, just anything like that. Like you were saying with, what was it, Diary of a CEO, where they're saying the negative people in your life, you just got to cut them out.
You got to cut them out.
Same thing. Just the opposite. Mm-hmm. You want to surround yourself with the positive people.
With the positive people. People that make you hungry. People that motivate you to be like, oh man, they're doing so good. I want to be part of that.
So coming back to being at the shop and you're in work mode, that's why that works, because you're surrounded by the people who are working. If you're home fucking around watching Netflix or whatever, like, you're not going to be motivated to do the things that would make you some money.
Well, and what happens when a bunch of artists are in a room together? You guys do it all the time. You talk about tattooing, you get inspired about tattooing, you get a fire under your ass lit.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to put yourself in that environment and get out of the cozy little situation that you may have. But you got to also remember, like, is this serving you? Is what Correct. What is what's normal right now, that it's comfortable, it's whatever, is it actually going to help you get move forward, right? And we were actually, I was talking to somebody who's interested in working with us, and he went to do his own private studio.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to do it anymore.
I wonder why. You know, one of the best comments that we've got was, oh, these guys just love to hate on the private studios. So,
well, there's no hate. I'm not hating on private studios.
I'm not
studios,
saying you. No, it's like us. Because
we're definitely, like, you know, we're biased with, like, the whole, like, you know, like, shop.
The shop vibe, man. It's so good.
The shop vibe is so good.
But then the...
Well, this kid, a private studio is not right for him, because he's way too hungry. He's like at every convention. He's doing so many guest spots. He's doing seminar after seminar. He's so hungry that when he was in a private studio environment, he felt like, okay, there is something missing.
This stifling.
And this ain't it.
By people, myself. People's here. Missing.
Yeah, people.
Right.
People's missing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you this though. There's people that work in shops, and they might as well work in a private studio.
Yeah.
Because if you're working in a shop and you're not showing your work, showing your drawings, or asking for an opinion of your coworkers that are good tattooers.
Completely reclused.
If you're completely just in your bubble, you're not showing your work at the end, you're not showing your process to the people that are working with you, who are your peers, who are good at what they do, you're not improving. Mm-hmm. You are not getting the feedback, whether it's good, bad, or not. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's about having perspective. You need to get someone else's perspective, their take, because just seeing what somebody else is doing for 2 seconds, just... it might click something new in you. It might show you a different way to approach how to solve a problem in a different way, because that's what we do with as artists, is how to solve these problems that the clients might give you. But if you're not willing to see, like, how would you solve this issue? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it's 100 times better than what you would have thought, you know? And sometimes you're like, oh, this looks great. And then you're like, have someone like, what do you think about this? And you're like, ah, dude, I think you should go blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, oh, fuck.
Shit, I didn't see
that. Yeah. And then that thing just clicks, dude. And that's something that you're going to have in your arsenal for the rest of your career, dude. You know?
And to add on to that, not only just ask other artists in your shop what they think, go over to their station, watch them tattoo for a couple of days and see what they're doing.
See what they're doing.
You'll learn a lot just by doing that.
Absolutely.
That was a promise that I made to myself and anyone else that comes to work with me. It's going to be, like I said, it's a brand new thing. If I want to bring people in that are motivated and hungry. I need to provide something to give back to their motivation and their hunger. So I have been very, very adamant about like, hey, looking at their tattoo, what if you tried this? What if you tried this? Or show me your design before you tattoo it. And like, hey, I think you should probably try this out. This might be better. So I want to, even if I'm not working with anybody that's like super well known or anything like that, I want to be around motivated artists, because when I am teaching somebody something, I'm learning at the same time. Absolutely. I'm like, I just explained how to do this and now I understand it even more. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, yeah. 100%.
It's like you're finally listening to yourself.
Yeah.
One of the best ways to learn something is to teach it.
Yeah.
So that's actually a thing that I forgot where I heard this from, but it's a way to if you're learning a new skill, read up on it, watch a video on it, learn just enough that you get kind of a grasp on like the basics of it, and then pretend like you're now the teacher and you have to teach someone else how to do it. And now that you're verbalizing it again and breaking it down into steps, it makes you relearn it and you understand it so much more better.
Yeah, because do you ever feel like if you're showing someone something, you always just kind of knew how to do it? You do the thing here and you do the little thing there, duh. But when you verbalize it, you have to make it make sense to someone else.
Yes.
The why starts coming out. Like, oh, this is why I do this, and this is why this works.
It's been fascinating because now that I've been changing my focus on being more driven to helping any other artists that are working with me, I'm learning more. And I'm now being held responsible to do that exactly in my own work when they're coming over and asking how to do something. Well, this is why you do this. This is why you do that. And I don't know, I feel like just changing my focus and not just focusing on doing my tattoos and whatever and kind of leaving and being there with the other artists and remembering I'm creating an environment conducive to building your career, to building and getting better. It's made my intentions different and my intentions have changed. Like my tattoos have gotten better.
That's awesome.
Like, of course. And that's great.
That's exciting. And that's like a great point in anybody's career. When you start really being like, oh man, I have all these people around me and I want to share what I know. And that's one of the things that has been so rewarding about doing this podcast, about sharing what we know, about giving people an outlet to communicate, because this is something that, you know, we have a, you know, just on this panel right now, we have so much knowledge and so many years of doing what we do and all of us doing it in different ways. And we get to just give this to people, you know, without asking anything back. And a lot of people, when I get messages from people, just seeing how much they appreciate it. And I'm like, God damn, man, there's people that sit and work right next to me that don't fucking ask me shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they don't ask me shit, bro.
Yeah.
And I'm like, here's this person across the country, because at the end of the day, libraries exist all over the world, but only some will go there and do the effort to pick up a book and see what's in them. You know, not everybody does.
There were a lot of heartbroken people when I put that April Fool's prank on them.
We were quitting. I know. That was a good one, dude.
What did you do?
That was good.
On April Fool's, I said that we were quitting the podcast. I was like, thank you for being a listener. You know, we couldn't have done this without you.
That was really good. That was really good.
Yeah, people were upset.
It was cool.
One guy was like, oh man, before I realized it was April Fool's, I was about to give you a heartfelt thank you for doing the podcast.
That was great.
Faking your death to see how many people actually cared about you. Oh, I'm glad all you guys showed up to my funeral. Just kidding. Love y'all.
Damn, that was a whole episode of what show? There was a show that they did that. I think it was Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I love Curb.
Yeah.
I mean, they did that on a bunch of stuff.
I think Curb Your Enthusiasm did that, and it was like this guy that became...
Did they do it on Sunny too? Didn't Frank fake his death or pretend?
So.
Yeah, right? And I wouldn't be surprised if Frank would do something like that.
It was like my living funeral. It was something like that. And it's like, why should somebody have a funeral at their death? Nobody gets appreciated. I want to have it while I'm alive so I can say thank you to everybody that showed up to my funeral, bro.
Some of our number one haters would definitely be like, oh, man, what am I going to hate on now?
Yeah.
We got some trolls. It comes with any territory once you get like popular on any platform. But
those are my favorite
We got some people that are just consistently like,
you know what?
Consistent haters.
I appreciate
they show up.
Hate.
Yeah, they show up. They're there and like a pre-order line.
They're looking
like they're there. They're outside the Best Buy the day before. Like they're there ready for the post.
I kind of like
that engagement.
I can't wait. Yeah. I know. I can't wait to hate on these guys.
I can't wait to fucking shit on this episode.
Fucking boomers.
Yeah.
I'm like, boom. Oh shit, I'm a boomer now. Awesome. I've been upgraded.
Well, I was thinking about it the other day, like how a lot of newer tattooers don't necessarily like understand or appreciate a lot of the values that tattooers, at least like us in this room, may have.
We're babies.
Right.
I don't even think I'm that old.
I don't know. Yeah.
Like what?
So stop.
Inky Baby called you a senior citizen.
Yeah. He was like, dude, you're a senior citizen. You know what's funny is that I was like,
how long have you been tattooing?
Because we were 17 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we were having this like back and forth. And I have fun with some of the comments. I usually don't engage, but you know, if you're just like outright being a fucking troll, like I'm gonna call you out on it. And this guy at the end to have the last word on the comment says, and you're a senior citizen. Like
I mean, yeah, compared to how many tattooers that are in the industry now that have been doing it for 1 to 2 years, technically you are.
Right? And totally. And I was just like, I ended it right there. I'm just gonna let her have that one. Fuck.
But so, like, what I was thinking about that is like, we can sound like boomers or whatever because we have certain values and things that were very important when we started and were very important for a very long time that a lot of people don't value now.
Right.
And that's the path that can bring them to a private studio or whatever. Not hating on private studios, but like the tattooers that never worked in a shop and that kind of taught themselves and just do their own thing and things like that. And they're perfectly fine and they're doing great. Whatever. If it works for you, fine. But I think a lot of those values that we talk about how, you know, interpersonal skills, walk-ins and being,
right,
you know, so many different things. I think it's because they're not in the rooms hearing those things from people they admire. They're not putting themselves in the environments where they're going to hear the stories. They don't hear the stories that they should hear. They don't care that tattoos that look this way are going to age a certain way because they were not drilled in the head a million times and they didn't have a million other people saying, well, no, you don't have to. I think it's like generational things. Like if you raise a son to, you know, like be a certain way for women, you're going to create a better husband for somebody. If you raise someone to think this way and value this, they're going to be a better this for that. I think there's a lot of opportunities that tattooers are missing because that conversation that we had with older tattooers is not happening with them anymore. Yeah. And they're not around those tattooers. They don't have to see those tattoos that aged like shit.
Yeah.
Give that a clap.
Right. Yeah, absolutely, dude. Absolutely. I think like there's a big thing now where I feel like everybody has like this example of like, well, this one person did it. You know, or that one person, you know, like
everyone likes to like list an exemption.
Everyone wants to be a special little snowflake, dude. Like,
oh, okay.
Everybody wants to be that like unique snowflake. Nobody is, bro. I'm sorry, but there's only one Philip Liu. There's only one of them, dude. Yeah. You know, and there's like very few guys that started off at home and made it to be great tattooists. Mm-hmm. Very few.
Yeah.
You know, very few tattooers that like, you know, just did things outside of the norm and became great. That is not a normal thing, guys. It is not a normal thing.
It doesn't happen all the time.
It doesn't happen all the time. But people see these examples and they're like, oh, well, that one person did it.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. Just because it's possible doesn't mean it's probable. You know?
Or the norm.
Or the norm at all. You know, just because you've seen somebody do something, it doesn't mean that it's going to go that way for most people.
Correct.
You know? And I think like too many people just see these examples and they're like, oh, well, that person did it, so that's what's gonna heat. Nah, man, no, that doesn't happen all the time. You got to put in your work.
That's what I think of with all those suckers buying lottery tickets.
Like,
you're not gonna win.
No, dude, just donate that money to taxes. Yeah, exactly. Dude. That's just think about it like that. There's a possibility you might win, but it's probably not gonna happen.
Have you ever seen that show on HBO called Crashing?
No, actually, yes. With Pete Holmes.
So it's a show about a new comedian, and he wants to break into the New York comedy scene. And I've been rewatching it, and I kind of made this little connection because in the show, he thinks he's funny enough and that he can perform, you know, basically wherever he wants to build up to get to this point. And all of his peers that are very well-established comedians that have been doing this for years and years that had to bark on the corner and give flyers out and paid their dues, essentially. He learns along the way in that show that you kind of should eat shit a little bit in order to kind of understand and appreciate the journey that your hero actually went through. You kind of have to do those extra things and put certain things on a pedestal that you don't feel like you deserve yet for you to actually understand the value of that.
Correct.
Right? Like, I think when a lot of people don't agree with, you know, unpaid apprenticeships or things like that, I feel like it can kind of devalue what tattooing can be. Right. If you don't see it as this thing that you should work towards, I think you're not going to, there's a greater chance of you not doing something that's actually going to be really great and special. You're not going to feel that reward when you can be in a room with people that are doing things that you can actually do, that things that you look up to. I don't know. That show just kind of spoke to the early years of tattooing to me.
For sure. Somebody left that as a comment the other day, actually. They were saying, like, they said something along this lines. It said, it bothers me that this young generation doesn't understand that it took so much effort to get good at this. And now that it's so much easier to start at this and to get good at it, they'll do it for a few years and be like, well, you know what, whatever. You know, they'll just like blow it off because it doesn't take that much effort to get in it, to try to produce something good out of it.
Yeah.
You know, like if you spent years trying to learn how to make a good needle, how to build a good machine, how to like make all of these steps to then be able to just even tattoo, you know, you have less value for how special it is to put a mark on a person and do a good job at it.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to be as special to you. It's like, even if you're a touring musician, there's days where you have to sell your own tickets to bring people to your show. But if you were just deciding to come in knowing how to play some kind of instrument poorly or well enough, and you expect to be having the same kind of treatment as another band that did those tours, mm-hmm. did the rough stuff. When you actually get that great show, is it going to feel as good knowing, you know what I mean? Like,
it's going to taste, that victory is going to taste way better when you've done the shit.
I think if you put something on a pedestal, you're going to work harder for it.
Exactly.
If you look up to other artists and see things that they did and think, maybe if I did what they did, if I worked as hard as they did, if I learned as much as they did, then I could have something close to what they had. I think this entitlement to the tattoo industry is taking away a lot of the value in what makes it actually great and what makes it inspiring for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If just from reading the comments, it makes me think, and I don't know how true this is, it makes me think that the younger generation of tattooers have no interest in getting the approval from anybody else, whether it be their peers at their same level or older. True. They just,
I noticed
they're into tattooing, they're doing it for themselves, and whatever other artists think of them doesn't matter.
That's a lonely road though.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, a lot of people don't want to have to answer to anybody that's, you know, okay, boomer, like that's fine. They don't want to do it, then you don't have to. How are you going to grow? How are you going to understand the lessons that you're going to have to learn the hard way? You're going to have to figure it out for yourself.
I remember being young, a young tattooer, going to conventions, seeing the cliques. I'm like, oh man, what do I got to do to be a part of that clique?
Yeah.
Who do I got to impress? And I feel like nobody cares about that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's good and bad to that.
Right? Yeah, I mean, right.
I've ended up being in that clique and being like, oh, they're all just doing drugs. Like, okay, fine. All right, whatever. Just guess I got to do coke to get into this place or whatever. But there is a thing about being like, they got noticed in a world before Instagram for a reason.
Yeah.
And that kind of died off a bit. Now when I go to conventions, it's a totally different landscape.
I'm sure.
People are not like going crazy over this booth or that booth because it was sponsored by this.
He's the big TikTok guy that's in the room, dude. The guy that's big on TikToks.
Right.
Big dog in the room.
But I feel like there was a period of time where I was like, I would like to be in a room with them just so I can have an opportunity to someday maybe work next to them or something like that. I remember I was at a convention and I saw like Bob Tyrell and I was like, I can't go up to that guy, but it would be really cool to. And eventually later down the road, he ended up like being a buddy of mine and like being like, oh man, I can actually just go out and have a beer with Bob Tyrell and talk tattooing because I put myself in those rooms.
Yeah,
I put myself directly in the path of being around people greater than you and respecting people that have been doing it longer, been doing it better than you. And that made me a better artist because I worked harder to get it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Like the humility and the gratitude has been kind of lost because like I said, the younger generation of tattooers, they're really not placing their, like their values in like, like, let's say like other people or the image of other people and where they are and where they want to be. And it's the same, like you were watching, you know, just like you were talking about Bob Tyrell, you know, like, you know, these people in the industry to us coming up were like they were the bar, right? And we were trying to set the bar, you know, and to us it was high. And you know, once you kind of like get at that level where you're kind of rubbing shoulders with these artists, like you feel like, oh shit, like, you know, like,
maybe I did something right.
Yeah, maybe
you guys gotta stop like, sniffling and coughing into the mics.
I'm sorry.
We're at that level and we're equals, and it makes you feel like, it makes you feel proud.
But there's also a point where if you are a peer to that person, what do you do with that? What do you do with that now? Do you just revel in that and feel good about yourself? Or do you actually take this opportunity to go, okay, they still have more to teach me?
Correct.
So recently, especially with the shop changing over and with everything changing, I've been reaching out to all of my friends where they're doing things that I have not done, things that I'm not capable of. I'll take a picture of a tattoo and I'll send it to them. Or I'll take a video of me drawing and I have a question and I'll be like, hey dude, should I do this or should I do that? What do you think? Because there's always somebody out there that's going to know more than you.
Yeah.
And, you know, my friend Ryan Ashley said recently, I think on another podcast, she was saying that people at the bottom compete, people at the top share. And that's because you don't feel threatened by the other people because you are sharing that success. You want to see other people do great things while you're doing them too. And that's just been like a really great thing for me because I'm like, okay, I have all these amazingly talented friends that are open-handed with their knowledge to me. Now, how do I use this and apply it to this new generation of tattooers that are coming under my wing? How can I make them have a better environment based on knowledge from someone who's been doing it for a really, really long time. It's a cycle that doesn't stop if you're in that environment.
Yeah.
You gotta want it.
You gotta want it
really bad.
Yeah, you gotta know what your goals are. And if your goals are literally like most of ours, that comes with like our insecurities when it comes to growth. If you're satisfied, you know, you're always gonna get stagnant. But if you're not satisfied because you have that insecurity of like, you know, like my shit isn't as good as I think, you know, you're always gonna wanna push yourself to the next level. And even when you're at the top, right? Like I feel like the more confidence I've gained in tattooing, being comfortable with my tools and everything that I use to manipulate, my tools to be able to, you know, do the tattoo. I always feel like there's way more to learn.
Well, just like how you mentioned, like your client was upset that you didn't post it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three factors that I run into if I don't post a tattoo. The picture is shit. Mm-hmm. It's not a good example of the tattoo. Or I forgot and things came up and I posted another time.
Yep, that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or you know your client is really, really happy with that tattoo, but you're looking at it in your own critical eyes and you're seeing something so small, so dumb and so minuscule that you think everyone else is going to see. No one's going to see it. But that's why you don't post it.
Right.
And you don't want to explain to your client, well, I didn't post it because I feel this way about it. That doesn't mean you don't like the tattoo. You just feel that little insecurity about that tiny little thing that you did that you think made the tattoo less valuable, which it's not. It's just that's part of being an artist. You have to present your best self to, you know, to the internet or to any other clients or customers. Yeah. And if you feel that little moment, you're like, that wasn't my very best because I messed up 2%.
Yeah.
Man, I was telling Gabe that over the weekend, I have a new place and I paid somebody to paint it. And over the weekend, I went back in and I painted things that the person that I paid to paint
missed.
Because I'm like, dude, I can use the finest little brush and get this line so straight, dude. And I'm like, and anybody that was a normal human being would have never bothered or been annoyed by it. But every time that I walk by these certain spots where this person painted, I'm like, oh my God, if this was a tattoo, this would drive me insane, dude. And it's so small, dude, that it's like, no one would ever be bothered. No one would ever care, dude. But I'm walking by it every day and I'm like, I'm going to paint that shit. And the other day I was like, I got the day. Today is the day, dude. And I went in, I got a fine fucking brush and I'm just like dipping in the paint. I'm like, and as soon as that stopped, I was like,
at least that was something repairable. In my house, when I walk down the steps, the visual line of the bottom step is not parallel with the first grout line of the tile on the floor.
It drives you
crazy. Oh, that's annoying. Yeah, it would drive me crazy too. I'd be like, especially you see it more as you're like descending down into the step.
It's like a degree and a half off.
Oh, dude.
It's enough. Like, it's enough.
It's so small. And like when
it's like
think
moving
about
a stencil.
Tattoos in that sense, you know, like we might do a tattoo and it looks sick to the client. The client, this is amazing. I love it. It's so great. And then we're looking at that like tiny little thing about it that is just driving you nuts. No. And you're like, God damn it.
They're going to look at it for the rest of their lives and never find that flaw that you see in it.
Yes. No one's ever going to see that except your overly critical mind that's already been taught to do these things.
My wife fucking hates my overly critical.
Yeah.
Sorry for cursing. It's right. Warranted though. So that's how much she hates it.
It's one of those things that after it's locked in and you tune it, you can't turn it off.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fucking problem.
But it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you have that in your brain?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean,
because if something's good, but it can be better.
Yeah.
You know, you're always going to want option better.
There is value to being a little self-loathing sometimes.
Yeah, a little bit, you know.
It's always great until it comes back to your loved one. And they're like,
yeah.
How does this look? And you're like,
Do you ever show to your significant other and you're like, what do you think? And if they're like, oh, good job. You're like, I fucked up. Tell me you don't like it. Tell me I'm a bad tattooer. You know I'm a bad tattooer. I don't know. I've always been like very hypercritical of what I'm doing and always kind of like needing the affirmation of others to make myself get out of that mindset of like, no, you didn't fuck up. It's like good.
It's good.
Yeah, like it's but okay.
I also do ask for some friends. Can you tell me why this? Can you tell me where I fucked up, please?
Yeah.
And there's only a very few amount of those people that are actually going to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you have a friend that's going to just straight up tell you, you fucked up right here, dude, that right there. Yeah. And I know you see it.
You know
those
who
are
you
the
ask?
Most valuable friends to have in the
yeah, industry. Absolutely. You know who you ask? Those are the same group of friends that they'll be like, hey, dude, or hey, dude or gal, your fly's open.
Or
before you start that long speech, you got that FISA thing, the kale right there.
Or if you have stencil on your face all day and no one told you and your client's staring at you all day, like, this is just what they look like.
They don't love you like I do, bro.
No, they're just like, hey, listen.
That's not nice.
No.
Oh, man. We're on hour 23.
Yeah, let's call it a day.
Let's call it.
I still got a pack.
I know. Oh.
Same. Dang, dude, we just ran off with the combo,
guys,
though.
So we're getting ready. It's right now it's 11 o'clock and we're going to about to pack our stuff and we'll be at the Hudson Valley Tattoo Convention this weekend. Yeah, it's already happened by the time you already heard this.
Yep.
But
it was great.
It was great.
It was awesome.
Probably awesome.
Yeah.
And we're very much looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Just in case we need to edit the other part. Oh, man, it was a disappointment, man. Honestly, like I expected a lot. And, you know, I was kind of let down a bit at the end. But
no, that show is always great.
It's always great. I don't enjoy doing conventions as much anymore. I kind of just like to keep them as local and close to home. I enjoy being here in the shop. And I get most of my rocks off online with people.
Man, shout out to Richard Smith. A couple of years ago, I was talking to him about doing conventions, and this was around the time that I was like not really doing so many anymore. And I was like, "Oh man, you should come to whatever show. It's like this good opportunity to make some money." He's like, "I make plenty of money here at the shop." I was like, "Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right." We have the whole effort of packing your stuff, taking it somewhere there, and like setting up. You know, really, conventions are a great excuse to go hang out with your friends somewhere else and see friends that you haven't seen in a long time that flew away from far places, you know, to go meet with you and kick it.
Yeah.
Where else are you going to get kind of like an invite to go to somebody's shop if not you met them like face to face, you know?
Absolutely.
Because somebody, you could DM somebody or like do something over social media and be like, oh yeah, you should come guest spot. But you know what? I feel like more times I am going to take that offer or visit somebody even overseas, right? When they tell me in person, you were really cool, we would love to have you guest spot at our show.
I've gotten a couple of DMs from people.
And I'll honor it. I'll be like, yeah, I'm coming to visit you. I'm going to
No, I was going to say, I've gotten a couple of DMs from people and they're like, hey man, we'd love to have you in our shop. And I'm like, I don't know who you are. I'm like, thank you, but no thanks.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Just through DMs, well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never met the guy before.
Yeah. That's that old head mentality. Like, I never shook your hand before, so I don't fucking.
My only advice to younger tattooers is if there's a convention, go.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go, be friendly and talk to the people you're afraid to talk to and put yourself out there because you have no idea what that tattooer could open a door for you in this way.
Absolutely good advice. Like,
just put yourself in those scenarios. Like, I feel like when there was a point in time in my career where I was just doing convention during the weekends, guest spot, convention, guest spot, home for a week.
Yeah.
And that's when my shit took off.
Same.
Yep.
100%.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
Yeah.
And just like John was saying before, if you're going to be in a tattoo shop, completely just a loner, not talking to anybody, same thing with a convention. Like, don't go to a convention, just hang out in your own booth the entire weekend and not talk to anybody. You might as well not go at all.
You might as well just not
stay in your private studio. Yeah.
Unless I'm tattooing, it's hard to keep my butt down on the convention. Like,
but leave some time, because I've done this too, and I've made it a point to make sure that I don't overbook myself.
Social butterfly.
like leave some time so you can socialize and hang out and Sunday, see the other people around them.
Sunday is the fun day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And, you know, some of the best advice that I've gotten in my tattoo career, I got on a Saturday night at like 3 a.m. in someone's hotel room in some convention somewhere. Straight up.
Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you where. Somewhere. Because they all look the same kind of.
True.
And, you know, back when they were on hotels and shit like that. But absolutely changed my career.
All right.
I think we should do recommendations.
All right. I started a show last night. It's awful. It's got a terrible name, but it got me hooked. It's called The Magic Prank Show.
The Magic Prank?
Yeah, The Magic Prank Show. It's a terrible name. Do you remember there was a show a couple of years ago on Netflix called Magic for Humans?
Yes.
Yeah, so that guy, now he does a magic prank show. And he'll put out on Twitter or whatever, like, you know, who wants to prank who? So people will come on like, oh yeah, my sister's, she's been pranking me for years. I got to get her back. So now they set up this whole elaborate thing to prank the sister using magic.
Cool.
And it's pretty funny. I got 2 episodes into it. It's pretty good. So the sister that I'm talking about right now would prank the brother for years using a mannequin head in his bed. And he would like turn on the lights and this body would be in his bed and freak out and fell for it every time. So the prank now was the brother invited the sister to like a massage place. They were getting some like cryotherapy. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
So he would put his head in like this cryo machine, this fake cryo machine, and they would turn the dial up and he would just like completely freeze his head. Now his head is just a chunk of ice. The alarms are going off, sirens and everything. And the sister's freaking out. And the magician took the block of head out. He was like, oh my God, and then drops it and it shatters and
the sister's so freaking good. Out. That's good.
It's good. Terrible name, but it's good.
That's pretty good. My recommendation actually this week, it's not so much a recommendation, but it's just like a short thing that I got by a designer. His name is Rick Owens. Some people might know him, some people might not. But I'm going to play you guys a little bit of what he says. And it's really good.
Work all the time and produce and produce and produce. And the more you produce, your character or your talent will emerge, for better or for worse, your identity, your personality, your vision, whatever. As long as you work and make enough things to choose from, you'll be able to have an edit. You'll be able to edit something that becomes who you are.
That's it. So good just advice. Put your head down and freaking get to work. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Get to work.
Yeah, I follow like a motivational, it's like it's not a motivational page. It's more of like making fun of it, but, it's just this guy that makes little notes that are sometimes bullshit, sometimes profound. And, like during the whole time that I was doing the shop move and all that, I stayed off of social media. I was not in the right place to be producing anything and things like that. And he wrote down like, it's okay to just go away for a few months and come back when you're better. And, I don't know. I feel like that was super valuable. I think like sometimes you can feel a little bit overworked or overwhelmed. Like you constantly have to be in a producing state. It's okay to just consume for a little bit. Like if you're talking about your self-preservation, you don't have to be this workhorse, this monkey performing all the time. If you need to take a break and remember how to like focus on yourself, get back to who you are, remember why you're doing what you're doing. If you have to go away for a little while, do it. And then come back when you're in the right space to actually be able to give people something valuable and productive. And that's what I did. I just kind of sat and did my own thing, got myself right, come back when I'm good. It's okay to disappear for a second.
Absolutely. You had to recharge.
Yep.
Just like your pen machines.
Gabe, you got anything?
Oh, man. I've been trying to think about it, but I usually have some sort of like wise ass comment to say or some movie quote, but I think in this essence, I've been thinking about this lately as far as like, you know, because I've been thinking on the horizon, like I want to own a home. So I'm also thinking about like, where do I just stupidly waste and throw away my money? I feel like as tattooers, good recommendations that we don't receive enough are financial ones. Like, for instance, I feel like a lot of us, since we spend so much time in the tattoo studio, we spend a lot of money on things like food, drinks, and coffee. Brew your own cup at home. That's already saving you anywhere between $5 to $8.
A day.
And shit, have a nice little like meal plan. Like prepare your own meals and stuff like that. I feel like financially a lot of tattoo artists suffer because we come from that like pirate mentality.
Yeah.
Because we see that money come in so quick.
Today, matey.
Yeah, that we're just so easy to party it off or just like have fun with it. But I feel like we're entering kind of like a day and an age where even as like tattooers, we got to start really treating ourselves a little bit more professionally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And just having more financial and you know, in many other aspects for like respect for ourselves.
Take care of your back.
Oh yeah.
And take care of your back.
Yeah.
Stop. All right. Tripping. So before we leave, just want to thank our Patreon supporters. We forgot to do this last
week.
So we have a couple of new patrons that jumped on. I want to give a shout out to Brandy Tattoos, Katie L, Emerson, and Joanna Lafayette. If you want to be like those guys and help support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/honesttattooer. I still have yet to add that extra tier in there, but you can select the tier that's appropriate for you and become a patron supporter and see some additional content that doesn't make it into the show.
Awesome. Thank you to them.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week.
All right, guys. Peace.
See you. Peace.